This is Audible.
Audible Studios presents Bad Boy Brody. Written by T. Jen. Performed by Sebastian York and Brooke Bloomingdale.
Chapter 1. Brody. Los Angeles, 7 months earlier. There was press everywhere. The camera lights were flashing. Glitzy people were all over the room, but I looked around, watching from the back corner. Brody. I frowned at my publicist, who was heading over to me. Before Shelby could say anything more, I asked, "Have you seen Kyle?" "Kyle?" She pretended to be confused, patting her hair. I cut her another look. She didn't like my brother, never had, but she could suck it. Honestly, this was my big movie premiere, and I wanted my fucking brother there. He promised to show. "Shelby, don't fuck with me." Her confused look melted into a sultry one as she pressed her body against mine, her hand playing on my arm. "But I'd love to fuck with you. You know that." She made sure to rub her breast against my arm before standing away from me. This was Shelby's game. She was one of the best publicists out there, and most of the time she acted as my manager, too, but she'd never made it a secret how much she wanted my dick. To her credit, she'd had it. I'd been acting for 2 years. She got my dick on a regular basis for the first 6 months of our relationship, but then we started a professional one, so I ended things. I wasn't a goddamn idiot. I knew where I wanted to be, and being single would help. That made me sound like a manipulative asshole, but I didn't give a shit. I had been an extra on movies before moving to small parts. Supporting actor roles had been next, and finally, I landed the movie role that was already promising to launch me into the type of movies I needed. I was going to be a goddamn A-list actor, but my fucking brother wasn't anywhere he was supposed to be. He said he'd come tonight. We had no parents. They both died too young from cancer, so it was just Kyle and me, and he had always been supportive. Something was wrong. I couldn't shake this feeling. It was nagging me, and I couldn't shake it. It was growing more by the minute. Something was off. A waiter passed with a tray of champagne, and I reached out, snatching one of the glasses. I threw it back, still straining to see around the filled movie lounge. People were looking over at us. I saw the interest, and that was fine with me. I knew I commanded it. I wasn't an actor who put my life out there for the magazines to know. I kept the interviews to a minimum. I did the press junkets only when I needed to. I showed up on time. I knew my lines before walking into the studio. I rarely flirted. I shook hands with whomever I needed to. I played golf with them, too. I did just enough so people knew my name, but not enough for them to know me. And no one knew about Kyle. But this night was for him, too. It was a celebration of the hard work and sacrifice we'd both gone through to get me here. He and his wife put me up so many times that there was a permanent indentation on their couch. Countless nights I'd eaten spaghetti or ramen noodles until Cheryl wouldn't take no for an answer and demanded I join them and their two kids for dinner. God, a wave of nostalgia rose in me. I loved his family. Andrea and Elisma were like my own little girls. One day I promised myself, one day I'd do an animated movie and they'd be my dates for that premiere. I might have to do it sooner rather than later since they were both drawing past 8 and 10 years old. They'd be adults in the blink of an eye. I glanced at my phone again. It was still blank. No calls from him. Kyle was supposed to have been here 40 minutes ago. Something isn't right. That sick feeling wasn't going away. "Come on." Shelby's hand curled over my arm. She indicated a couple drawing close to us. "That's the president of DreamPix Productions. They want to meet you. They already sent an email about working on a project with you later in the year." I glanced up. Edward Branch and his wife were almost to us. I saw the keen look in his eyes, but that wasn't what I was preparing myself for. It was the wife. She had the same stark hunger in her eyes so many other females in my life had. Catching my gaze, she smiled coyly and licked her lips. Yeah, she was going to be a problem. Fuck this. I pressed Kyle's number and murmured in Shelby's ear, "Stall for me."
What?
Bro, Edward Branch started to say, but I ducked out from behind Shelby. It was rude and stupid. Okay, it was ridiculously stupid of me, but I had to check on Kyle. She twisted around, and I mouthed "stall" to her again before slipping into a back and more private hallway. It was almost time to go in. I couldn't shake the edginess. It was a feeling of doom hanging over me. Kyle's phone rang, and then I heard his voice message. "Yo, this is Kyle. Do your thing. Beep." "Kyle, fucking call me. Where the hell? Beep, beep." I glanced at the screen, saw he was calling me back, and switched to that line. "Where the hell are you?" "I'm coming. I'm sorry. Cheryl and I had a fight." "Again? You guys have been fighting a lot lately." There was static in his background. He was straining to speak on his end. Pressing a finger in my ear, I moved farther down the hallway. I had to find out what was going on. "Kyle, where are you?" "Listen, Brody, I'm damn proud of you. I can't wait to get there." My throat was swelling, tightening with emotion. "God damn. Where are you?" "I'm in your car." "My car? The fuck? Are you close? I gotta go in pretty soon." "No." A screeching sound cut through his words, metal on metal slamming together. "Kyle." No answer. "Kyle." "No. No. No." I knelt, hunching over. I was in some corner, hidden by a fake plant. My palms were suddenly ice cold and sweaty as I gripped the phone. My pulse sped up. My heart was trying to thump its way out of my chest. "Kyle, answer me." I was desperate. My throat was dry. Someone touched my arm and I shot to standing. I rounded, finding Shelby standing there. Her hand went to her chest. Her lips parted on a startled gasp. "Brody?" Her eyes went to my phone. I had it in a death grip, pressed so tight against my ear it could have drawn blood. Her throat moved. She was swallowing.
What's going on?
I shook my head. I couldn't talk, not to her. I was too focused on full-on shouting into the phone. "Kyle!" People were coming from the main lobby to see what the commotion was about. The line. There was still nothing on his end. "Please, Kyle, answer me." I was begging. My voice cracked from the pressure. Shelby's hand covered her mouth. She choked out a sob. I watched as the blood drained from her face. The line went dead.
"Oh my God, oh my God, oh my God."
Shelby was scrambling for her phone. I couldn't do anything. My brother. I heard her punch in some numbers, then a faint, 911, what is your emergency? Chapter 2. Matthew. Pryor Mountain Range, South Montana. Present day, early May. A car crept up the driveway. Its tires crunched over the gravel, moving closer to the large three-story home. There was a crisp chill in the morning air, which didn't seem to bother the man who got out from the driver's side. Standing over 6 feet tall, Matthew Kellerman ran a brisk glance over the Kellerman estate. It had always been a gorgeous home. He could already see telltale signs that it was empty. The grass hadn't been mowed. Paint was stripping from the sides of the house. The shrubbery in the fields that would normally be trimmed low looked untouched. He sighed. Of everyone, the only one who remained at the house was his stepsister, and he found his eyes tracking out to the fields surrounding where he stood on the mountain as if he could see Morgan. He couldn't. The house was nestled into a side cliff, just short of one of the higher peaks on the hill. He was able to see some of the land around them, the spots that weren't hidden by dense forest and the river that swept its way around the mountain, winding to the end and leading into a lake that was hidden in a valley between two other mountains. He could already feel the effects on his body from the altitude. His mouth was parched, and he felt the beginning of a headache forming just behind his temples. Yes. He looked back to the stately home. It had been too long since he'd been back. Way too long. Grabbing his bag from the trunk, Matthew went inside using the keys that hadn't been used in 4 years. The second he stepped inside, memories came at him with breakneck speed. He could hear Morgan's laughs of glee as she raced around the house. She was the youngest of them and was brought into the family when his father and her mother married. Either he or one of his two other siblings always raced after her. Finley and Abigail doted on Morgan as much as he did. The twins might have only been 2 years younger than him, but they were 4 years older than Morgan. The last time he'd seen her, which was 4 years ago, he had hardly recognized her. She would have been 24 then. Her hair had darkened, but there were still streaks of blonde in it from her time in the sun. Her skin had been golden tan, and she held the same smell of the wild mixed with the scent of the horses she spent more time with than she spent with humans. Even then, he saw how wild she was. He also saw just how much like her mother she looked, too. She had the same slender build, the same striking, beautiful hazel eyes, and the same cheekbones. Yes, Morgan had been stunningly beautiful back then. He couldn't help to wonder how much more so she had become, but glancing out the window, his thoughts were interrupted. Another vehicle was pulling up outside. Matthew heard the same sounds of the tires moving over the tiny rocks, and he went straight for the coffee machine. Seconds later, laughter pealed through the air. Holy shit, it hasn't changed up here. Are we looking at the same house? A feminine voice laughed. This place is a mess. Morgan hasn't been keeping it up. A snort from the other. Are you kidding me? Taking care of a house isn't in her repertoire. We all know that. A trunk slammed shut as Matthew was pouring the full-sized pot of water into the machine. He was rummaging through the cupboards when the door opened and his two siblings walked inside. Finley dropped his bags onto the floor with a thud. His eyes lit up when he saw his older brother, and his arms spread wide. Matt, you're a sight for sore eyes. Abigail laughed as she came in next, dropping her bags next to Finn's. And when he says sore, he means it. He's been complaining about his back for the last hour. Matt and Finley caught up in a hug, smacking each other on the shoulder. Pulling away, he turned toward his sister and pulled her in for a tight hug. Man, I've missed you guys. Abby let out a soft sound, wrapping her thin arms even tighter around him. Not as much as we've missed you. Tears filled her brown eyes and she wiped them away. I'm already crying. What a mess. She waved her hand in the air, drying her face and letting her gaze travel to the open back of the coffee machine. Oh, I didn't think Morgan would have coffee stock for us. Well, I haven't actually found any, but I was hoping. Nope. Finley shook his head as their sister left the house. Abby knew this would happen. She made me stop in Silver Springs on the way because of it. We all know Morgan is outside as long as the weather allows it. That was most of the year. Even back when they were kids, she took to the Mustangs living around the property like a fish to water. It was an old cliche, but the best way to describe it. It wasn't normal, but it was special. She was adopted by one mare, and since the first day Morgan had clambered onto Shoal's back, she lived more in the Mustang world than the human one. He had hoped growing up, getting her high school diploma and then an online college degree would urge her to become more ingrained in their world, his world. It hadn't. Have you seen her? Finley was going through his phone, but paused and looked up. His features tightened before he shook his head. I was hoping maybe you had. 4 years. That was a long time. Abby returned, carrying three grocery bags. Finley took them, setting them onto the counter, and Abby opened the one closest to her and pulled out the tin of coffee grounds. Now we have coffee. She laughed again and ran a tired hand down her hair. The essentials. Finley reached into one of the other bags and pulled out a bottle of bourbon. Speak for yourself, Abs. This is my essential. Speaking of, Matt pulled out three glasses. Inspecting them for dirt, he raised his eyebrows. They're actually clean. He put them in front of his brother. Fill me up, Finn. It's been a long day of traveling for all of us. Finn opened the bottle, pouring a double shot in each before offering the bottle to his sister. You want in on this? She grimaced. No, thank you. She moved to the coffee machine, measured out the grounds, and then hit the brew button. Coffee will do the trick for me. She pulled open the cupboard closest to her, saw it was more glasses, and moved to the next. She pressed her lips together. I'm in shock. Morgan must have been here recently. Maybe she's more human than horse after all. They all paused, sharing a look before bursting into laughter. Abby shook her head. Whatever she is, she did the dishes. They're freshly washed. How can you tell? Matt had moved to the other side of the counter, so he was standing next to Finn. Both brothers wore custom-tailored suits, but while Matt kept his dark hair a couple of inches long so he could tuck it behind his ear, Finn's was trimmed short. All three siblings had dark, almond-shaped eyes and dark hair, though Matt's had a touch of blonde in it. Abby took out a plate and held it up. It's still warm to the touch. Biting her lip, she put the plate back and opened the fridge. She gasped in surprise. And stocked the fridge, too. One bin was filled with lettuce, tomatoes, green peppers, and onions. A crisper had oranges, apples, strawberries, and raspberries. She pulled out a ketchup container and twisted off the top. It still had the seal over it. She went shopping for us. She opened the freezer. Holy crap! There's enough chicken in here to last us till the movie's done. The movie. The reason they were all there. A grin tugged at the corner of Matt's mouth, and he crossed the kitchen to the two large French doors. Standing there watching the horizon, the mountainside, he held his glass of bourbon in one hand and slipped his other hand into his pocket. She was out there, and he had a hunch she was watching him back. Finn moved to his left, and Abby moved to his right. All three Kellerman siblings looked out at the same time, each wearing a different expression. A touch of wonder hit Abby's eyes. A slight grimace flashed over Finn's face, but Matt just kept looking. Unlike his two siblings, who had come to the house for the same project that would bring trailers of movie equipment within the week, he was home for a whole other reason. Abby rested her head on his shoulder, saying softly, I wonder what she's doing right now. Finn grunted, finishing his bourbon. Who cares? She wants to live out there with a herd of wild horses? That's up to her. He moved around to refill his glass. Makes no difference to me. Matt didn't say anything, only transferred his glass to his other hand and reached to grasp Abby's arm in a half-hearted embrace. Morgan was 10 when everything fell apart, but they had gotten 4 years with her. 4 years after their father married her mother and moved them into this house. 4 years before everything ended in travesty. Abby murmured again. I can feel her in this house. She shivered, looking around. And it's weird. It's as if I can also feel Morgan. Abby lifted her head, peering at her older brother. Is Dad coming? Matthew shook his head with the slightest of movements. You know how he is. Abby grunted. They had 2 days to get the estate into shape because within the week, actors, grips, the director, producers, and everyone from the catering staff to the actors' assistants would start arriving. They were coming to film a movie about Morgan's mother, about how Karen Kellerman was murdered.
Chapter 3. Morgan. I saw them. I was across the valley, standing on my own cliff while they stepped out onto my porch. I knew why they'd come. I went to the same meeting to approve the movie script, but that had been so long ago. Shiloh stepped close to me, nuzzling my shoulder. Her black nose, smoky gray coat, and mane rubbed against me. Her mother had almost been like mine, but since Shiloh was foaled, she and I were sisters. She could sense my unease as distinctly as I could. This movie would be done. They would all go away and they wouldn't return. In the meantime, I reached up behind me, grabbed some of Shiloh's mane and half-jumped, half-lifted myself onto her back. She turned as soon as I settled, and the rest of the herd lifted their heads. They all turned down the path, heading to the better grazing in the next valley over. Glancing once more back at my home, I mentally said hello and goodbye at the same time. I was given human privileges, ones that I never took for granted. My mother's inheritance granted them to me. I was able to stay where I was. I could avoid humans as much as necessary. Some knew about me. Some whispered about me. Some thought I was a ghost. Only my stepfather, step-siblings, a few others knew the truth. One day I would have to join their world. That wasn't today. I bent and laid my cheek to Shiloh's back.
Chapter 4. Brody. Brody. My new manager leaned over from her seat and shook my shoulder lightly.
We're here. Wake up.
My sunglasses hid my eyes so she didn't see I was already awake. Had been since the plane landed. The touchdown was rough, but it always takes a bit before we got to the private plane hangars for deplaning. No reason to move and upset the hangover headache that was already pressing behind my forehead. I grunted my acknowledgement before sighing and sitting up. A ghost of a frown crossed her face, but it was gone as soon as I lifted my head toward Gale. Her eyebrows pinched together slightly, forming a middle wrinkle in her forehead. I almost grinned at the sight of it. Shelby would have panicked at the idea that she could even move her eyebrows. She would have fainted at the thought of a wrinkle up there. And that was one of the reasons why I enjoyed working with Gale over Shelby. There were others, too. Gail was in her 50s, wore her graying hair long, and had a whole maternal side mixed with a kick-ass attitude. She didn't take shit, but I knew she'd come to care for me over the last few months, and I saw how she was with her children. They were adult and grown, but they called almost daily to check in. That spoke volumes. I knew she was wondering if she should say something about the headache. But she knew why I drank. Her familiar inner conflict shifted to, if she said something about the drinking, then what? Then it shifted yet again to a resolute no. I was her client. I wasn't her kid. If I'd been her kid, she would have kicked my ass in gear long ago, but no. She would round back to the fact that I was her client. She managed me. She didn't raise me. Or, at least I assumed she was thinking all that. Since replacing Shelby in the managing and publicist aspect, I'd witnessed the storm of expressions play out over her face too many times to count. In the end, she kept quiet, like always. But the same instinct that told me something was wrong with Kyle also warned me that there'd be a time Gale wouldn't keep quiet. Will there be water in the car? Of course. The attendants were already helping with our bags. Gail turned to thank one as hers were passed to her, and then headed down the aisle. If you need a painkiller, she let the sentence hang as she disappeared down the stairs and onto the tarmac. My bag in hand, I nodded my thanks to the pilot and attendants, and then dipped down to follow. I had to take the sunglasses off. The sun had been high when we left California, but I was surprised by how dark it was. There's a time change, right? It was fucking cold, too. Gail was greeting our driver. She nodded, pointing to the bags that had been placed on the tarmac. As he went to put them in the trunk, she glanced at me. Yeah, we lost an hour. It's about 10 right now. It's dark and cold. Yeah, it gets cold here at night, so make sure you always have a jacket with you, at least at night. She frowned again before ducking once more and getting into the back of the car. She slid over as I sat next to her. Reaching for her seatbelt, she said, "They're hosting a party for your arrival. If you need a minute, we should stop somewhere." I switched from frowning to feeling a slight surge of irritation. I masked it. In some ways, Gail had saved me over the last few months. I'd been an asshole to almost everyone. I didn't need to start in on her, too. It had been my choice to drink the bottle of Patron last night, not hers. The driver shut our door, and we were soon heading from the airport. I rubbed at my forehead. I should have shaken the driver's hand, been all gracious, which was what everyone wanted to see from a celebrity when they met one. I did none of those things. Another asshole moment for me. I'd have to give him a good tip when he dropped us off.
Brody.
Hmm? Do we need to stop or not? It's an hour drive to the Kellerman estate. An hour-long drive? We were in fucking no man's land. What's going on again? She closed her eyes for a second, her mouth tightening before she let out a soft sigh. Her tone was markedly calm when she spoke. We're here to do the Karen Kellerman movie. You're remembering that, right? I scowled. You don't have to treat me like a dick. See? She was starting. Then stop acting like one, she shot back. I waited. Her eyes widened, and she turned into a statue watching me. I laughed. It had been the first time she had let out Mama Gale. Wondered when that side would come out. I stretched my legs out in front, and right away her shoulders loosened. She sank back into her seat, her hand falling to her lap. You aren't mad at me? Gale. I covered her hand with mine and squeezed once before letting go. I have been a terror to people in the last 7 months. Trust me, I try to hold back with you, but I know some of it slips out. She laughed softly, her head falling back to rest against her headrest. You can be trying, yes? I chuckled. It's okay to want to strangle me. Just refrain from actually doing it. Her mouth twisted down. You have reason, Brody. I felt a punch in the stomach. Yes, I listened to my brother die. I needed a drink. The need just made my headache triple. She reached over and patted my hand this time. Plus, the whole reason I'm here is because Shelby was a calculating bitch. My scowl was firmly back in place. Shelby had been the only other person who heard the call, and the bitch had her phone recording the whole goddamn time. She sold it to the media and gave a few interviews hinting that my brother's death hadn't been an accident. There'd been no evidence that he killed himself. The police had looked. There'd been no suicide note, no indication that it was even a possibility. An eyewitness collaborated that he simply lost control of the car, but she dropped the seeds. No matter how much I loathed Shelby, I couldn't shake the question if something else happened. And the bitch was shocked and pissed when I fired her ass. I growled, remembering the fucking lawsuit pending against me for unlawful termination. Gale was 3 times the manager Shelby had been, though. When Gale came on, she'd been the one to push this Kellerman project. I had wanted to do a superhero movie, which was still on the table. But Gale had dug her heels in, claiming that my public image had turned to shit since Kyle's death. I got a momentary grace in the public eye. Lots of sympathy and blessings, etc. But that had only lasted a week until I punched another actor at a bar. The media hadn't cared that the dick called a friend of mine a slut. Phone videos and images had been sold, and the story had started a whole host of bad publicity for me. As if overnight, I had gone from Hollywood's heartthrob to their bad boy. And that brought us to the whole reason I was being driven to somewhere I didn't want to be to work on a movie I didn't want to be a part of. Gale pitched the movie script to me, promising there would be Oscar buzz. That sounded amazing to her, not me. Oscar buzz meant work. I had to be the good guy until I finally won, and that was if I won. The budget wasn't huge, so I wasn't getting as much money, but Gale got this project as an attachment to the superhero one. If I didn't do this one, they wouldn't bring me on for that one. They were concerned about my behavior. I needed to be on time, be gracious, be professional, and act my way to an Oscar trophy. I still wanted to know how the fuck this movie got tied to that one, but everyone got quiet whenever I asked questions. Gale only kept saying that I would thank her later, and to be honest, I didn't have much fight in me. Not for this, anyway. Showing up and acting in this movie was small potatoes compared to the real shitstorm inside me. 40 minutes into the drive, I reached for one of the bottled waters. So, tell me about this family and what's going on tonight. Right. Gale put the movie script she'd been reading aside and dug in her bag. She pulled out a huge packet of papers. And before we get there, movies like this usually take 5 weeks, but this one might take longer. But don't worry. I have everything handled with your schedule, and take this. I did, and as I started to look through it, she started talking. Peter Kellerman. He's the main attraction for this movie because it's based on his last wife's death. The first one died long ago. Something health-related. Peter Kellerman. His photo and bio was on page one, along with an image of his latest hotel opening. He has that hotel franchise? Kellerman Hotels. It's a global franchise, but his children are all in his newest venture. Realty. His oldest, Matthew. I turned to the second page, and there was Matthew's image, along with a photo of him shaking the president's hand. He works for Peter. He oversees their operations on the East Coast. The other two are twins. I flipped the page again, and there were two separate images. A girl was first, and the guy on the bottom half of the page. Abigail and Finley. They are both developers, and Kellerman Realty is currently on the rise in California because of them. They're both good, damn good, at their jobs. Early 30s, 32, and, she motioned for me to turn the page again, so I did, Finley is engaged to Jennifer Court. Now, she took a breath, leveling me with a look. Here's the problem I see. I know you know Jennifer, but do I need to know how well you know her? My lip twitched into a crooked grin. Are you asking if I slept with her? Her face remained impassive. She didn't break a smile. You don't have female friends, and because you know her, I already know you slept with her. I'm asking if she's going to be a problem. Is there a reason for her to harbor resentment for you or hope to start up an affair again? They're all going to be there. This movie is a big deal to them. It was their stepmother who was killed, and I've been told Jennifer is showing up, too. Shit. I know I'm an asshole, but I'm not the cheating kind of asshole. You aren't answering my question. Is she going to be a problem? I looked down again and began reading through the bio Gail had for Jennifer. No, she won't be. We parted on good terms, friendly terms. I stressed the friendly part because it was true. Finishing reading what she had, my grin turned a little cocky. And I know something you don't have in here. I held up the binder. Jennifer is madly in love with her fiancé. The only way she'd look in my direction is if he turned out to be a cheating asshole and she found out about it. I saw the warning flare in her eyes. And no, I wouldn't touch her even then. You have nothing to worry about. I will be professional. She grinned faintly. Bad boy Brody won't make an appearance? I grimaced at what the media had dubbed me. Bad boy Brody will only show if I'm locked in my room and drunk and I don't have an early call. Her lips pressed together again. We're in the middle of the mountains. I hope you use this project as a cleansing retreat. All that scenery and mountain air and shit. I said I'd be professional. I'm not going to turn into a saint. She didn't show any reaction, but I felt the disapproval from her. Good thing I didn't give a shit about that type of stuff either. I asked. I read the script, but they never said why Karen Kellerman was killed. What? I waved my finger at her, my grin mocking. See? I pay attention. I have half the script already memorized. She shifted in her seat. You're one of the most sought-after actors right now. If you didn't work hard before, none of that would have happened. I'm not surprised that you've read the script. No, she was surprised. I already had half of it memorized, but she was right. Before Kyle's death, I was one of the hardest-working actors in the business. All the assholery had happened after. Still, I noted her surprise and made a mental note to maybe let up on some of the drinking for this movie. Some, not all. A guy still had his haunts. She was murdered by her first husband, right? Gail nodded, turning to look out the window. After leaving Livingston, we turned onto a winding road going up the side of a mountain. She said, "The script just says it was a domestic abuse situation. She hid from her ex-husband, and when he found her, he murdered her." "Hmm." I shrugged, thumbing back through the binder she gave me. I paused on the bio about Peter Kellerman. This was my role. I needed to understand him the best I could. He never remarried. What? I tapped his image. He never remarried. You said his last wife. That happened, what, 20 years ago? 18 years ago, and you're right, he never did. He wore a fancy suit, no shock there, unsmiling. His eyes were flat, his hair perfectly combed to the side. A speck of gray was showing, but most of it was black. Tanned so he spent time outside, but his hands were folded under his arms. It was as if he was squaring off against the camera, or whoever was behind the camera, or hell, maybe he was already challenging who would see this image of him. But he didn't remarry. That stayed with me. Did we reach out to him? See if I can meet him before shooting starts? Yes, I reached out to him, and no, we won't meet. He said to ask his children for any insight needed. The guy sounded like an asshole. I doubted I'd ever meet Peter Kellerman, and I was fine with that. He was just one role I would be playing. The car braked suddenly. Oomph! Gale shot forward, but my arm was already there, protecting her from hitting the seat in front of her before I turned my body. I molded around her so I was half-shielding her. The intercom crackled on. I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. His words were drowned out by a thundering sound. It grew and grew until they broke from the trees in front of us.
Chapter 5. Morgan. The horses wanted to run tonight. So did I. There were people at the house, people I didn't know, people who didn't know me. But they were there, and my step-siblings were wining and dining them. I heard the laughter, saw all the cars. The lights were on in the house, and people were spilling out onto the patio with blankets pulled around them. It was a large party. Too large. A car pulled up as I was there, and I watched a couple get out. The woman was dressed in one of the most beautiful dresses I had ever seen, and as they ran inside the house, it billowed out around her. The guy had on a suit, one of those that Matthew always dressed in. I knew Finley had to wear them too, but they signified a different world. Not my world. Matthew, Finley, and Abby brought their world there. It was crashing over mine, and the horses could feel it. We didn't like having these newcomers at home. I knew they would leave, but I couldn't relay that to the herd. They were scared and pissed, and they had to run. I heard them starting when I was at the barn and took off. If they were going, I wanted to go with them. And like another time so long ago, I ran and jumped onto Shiloh's back. After that, she kicked her hooves harder into the ground so we would catch up to the herd because they weren't waiting. The stallion was leading us away from these interlopers. We were going to the next mountain. But instead of going down into the valley and following the river that wound its way around our mountain, he was impatient. The stallion had us go right, and I braced myself. I knew what we would be crossing. Then, spying headlights as a car wound its way around the mountain, I could only hope they would be past where we would cross the road. The stallion wasn't stopping, car or not, we were going. The herd soared over the road. The stallion broke through the trees first, rearing his strong head up, but the mares were right after him. They were hot on the other's heels, and sometimes a group of 6 horses would cross at the same time. Shiloh and I were near the end, but the car had stopped. They were waiting. I was holding on to Shiloh so my entire body was flat, and I would normally just bury my head into her mane. But this time I didn't. I looked over. I didn't sit up, I didn't lift my head. I just merely turned. Even with her mane half blinding me, I was still able to see them. A driver's eyes were bulging, his hands gripping the steering wheel and his mouth was hanging open. He couldn't believe what he was seeing. My eyes trailed past him to the couple in the back seat. The woman was down, hunched over, and a guy was almost hugging her. But his attention was toward the road in front. Piercing eyes were staring straight at me, and his dark hair looked as if he'd raked his hands through it a few times. The moment was brief, but he was seared into my memory. Everything about him was dark, brooding, dangerous. He wasn't gaping at me like the driver. His eyes were alert, clear, and intelligent. Then they were gone, disappearing back into the trees, but I felt him. I felt as if he was inside me somehow. And as Shiloh carried me deeper into the woods and I was blanketed by the other mares, I couldn't help myself. I looked back, and he had moved, so he was watching me from the back window. I felt like I knew him, and I didn't like that feeling. Shiloh's head jerked back, her nostrils flared, her body tightened under me. She felt my fear, and she didn't know how to handle it. I buried my head back into her mane and stroked a hand down her neck. For the first time, I wasn't sure who I was soothing.
Chapter 6. Brody. The party was in full swing when we pulled up to the house. I laughed to Gail. This is the house? She gave me a tight-lipped grin back, but she knew what I was referencing. The home was like a lodge, big enough for 30 guests. There was a pool, a tennis court, and a huge barn with white fences that ran back behind the barn and all the way to where the driveway turned into a clearing. There were buildings farther down by the barn, but I couldn't make them out. A row of trees blocked my view. Brody! The front door opened and out spilled some images I'd recently looked at in the car. Matthew, his siblings, and others that I didn't recognize. A small crowd was soon forming behind him. Gail! Matthew led the charge, giving her a hug before extending a hand toward me. I nodded, shaking it. Matthew Kellerman. Yes, his grin widened. It's nice to officially meet you. He stepped back, indicating his siblings. This is Finn and Abby, my brother and sister. Finn gave a nod and a handshake, but Abby looked like a fan. Her eyes were wide and she held her breath as I shook her hand. Then, ducking her head, she asked, "Can I get a hug? I know this might not be appropriate, but I'm a big fan." This relaxed me. Seeing wild horses burst through the trees? No. A fan? Absolutely. Abby just became my favorite Kellerman. I went into full movie star mode, upping the smoldering effect on my eyes, my grin turned so it was half cocky, but also half genuine as I hugged not only Abby, but also the other females that approached. A few of the men wanted a hug, but most were fine with a handshake. I always got the once-over, the look each guy gave me to see what separated me from them. It was damned good genes, my mother's high cheekbones, the square jaw from my dad, and a body that training 7 days a week in a gym couldn't get me. I did that, or I had until Kyle, but I still had muscle definition. I'd have to slip away for a run to tighten everything back up, but I knew I was blessed. After all the introductions were done, most of the group returned back to the house, but Matthew stayed back with Gail and me. The driver remained by the car, waiting for instructions on where to put our bags. How was the drive up? Matthew's smile seemed normal as he asked the question, but there was an edge of caution in his voice. It was eventful, that's for sure, Gail said dryly, shooting me a look. I narrowed my eyes, studying Kellerman as I stated, "A herd of horses ran in front of the car." He looked my way. That smile slipped a bit, tightening. Horses? His Adam's apple moved up and down. I glanced to Gail and the driver. I would have counted 30 or 40, maybe. Those aren't the horses we're using for the movie, are they? He shook his head, saying to Gail, "No, no. We have a few from a nearby ranch we're using." "Are those your horses?" I was going over the script in my head. The few scenes that had horses in them were mild shots. There were no action sequences. The note said the characters would go on an easy ride with the focus on the conversation. There'd be the usual close-ups and zoom-in of Karen holding hands with Peter. No. He shifted his champagne glass to his other hand and scratched behind his neck. There is a herd of Mustangs in the area. The sanctuary here runs on some of our land, but I thought they had been moved to a different area. I'm sorry to hear that they ran out in front of your car. That isn't normal, I guarantee. Thank goodness for that. They were beautiful to watch, but it was so sudden. We could have had a nasty car accident. Her voice trailed off, hearing her own words, and she turned to me. She reached out. Oh, Brody. I'd already been thinking of Kyle and clipped my head in a brief nod. A damn drink would be nice. Don't worry about it. We can talk about car accidents. It almost happened just now. But I saw the guilt linger in her eyes. Ma'am? A soft cough from the driver. Oh. Her hand pulled back. She asked Matthew, where do we unload our bags? Kellerman's shoulders relaxed a little. Yes, he gestured toward the barn. There's a cabin down there where we put Brody, he said, and then turned to me. We know you wanted your own space for privacy. Gail, we have you in a room in the main home. Excellent. She was in work mode. Her bags were taken out, and she went inside with the driver. I waited by the car, and Matthew turned to me again, his smile a bit hesitant. So, Brody. I prepared myself. I'd heard the same tone from lawyers, reporters, and almost everyone else. It was the voice of someone who didn't know me but thought they did. He asked, are you comfortable with horses? I hadn't expected that question. I rode a few times as a kid with my brother, but that was probably 20 years ago. Yes, yes. He was nodding as if he knew what I was going to say before I said it. So they didn't scare you that much? I frowned. That was an odd question. What do you mean? I meant... He stopped, his eyes narrowing for a bit. Wild Mustangs. They must have been a shock to see, right? Yeah, he was fishing. You said there were 30 or 40. Were you able to really see the horses? I mean, did you notice which one was the stallion? His questions weren't what he wanted to know. He was asking something else. Then I got it. He wanted to know if I studied the horses. The image of that girl flashed in my mind again. It had been her hair that had caught my eye. She'd been hugging her horse, her arms and legs wrapped around, and if I hadn't been looking closely, I wouldn't have seen her. Every inch of her had been plastered to that animal, as if she were an extra layer of skin on the Mustang. And those eyes. I still felt the impact of them. She'd only been wearing pants and a shirt, which was odd since it was fucking cold out. I couldn't get that out of my head, and I couldn't get her out of my head either. It was as if she stuck her hand inside, took hold of my organs, and crawled in beside them. I still felt her. That was who he was talking about. No, I shook my head. I didn't see the stallion. He was still watching me closely. I added, they were running so fast that it was done within a few seconds. At that, his shoulders fell back, smoothing out. Ah, yes. I do hope to section off the lands where we'll be shooting for the movie, so hopefully you won't see the herd again. He nodded past the barn. You can't see it now, but they typically run on the other mountain over there. If you see him again, it'll be far in the distance. The image of that girl flashed in my head again. Her dark eyes. Her dark, golden hair. I only got a glimpse, but she was stunning, and I found myself saying, I hope not. I wanted to see her again. And I ignored the sharp look Kellerman threw my direction.
Chapter 7. Morgan. It was 4 in the morning. The last of the strangers finally went to bed, and I heard their snoring as I tiptoed through the building. I hadn't wanted to come back, but I needed clothes. It was getting colder at night, and though Shiloh and Shoal broke the night wind if I stayed with the herd, they couldn't completely ward off the chill. I was used to the extremes with the weather. My body adjusted long ago, but I still got cold. I stayed in the house nights during the bad weather, and in the winter. On those nights, I'd usually slip into the second floor of the barn. The house was mine, but I always felt like it was theirs. My step-siblings, my mom, and him. The apartment felt more like home to me. It had been renovated so it looked like a normal apartment, but that wasn't where I'd gone. I wanted to see them. I was standing above where Abby was sleeping. Her face was turned toward me, her arm was thrown up on the pillow, and her body was twisted the other way. She'd have a kink in her neck when she woke, but she looked happy. I knelt, looking closer. There were no bags under her eyes, but the laughing lines still around her mouth made me smile. Yes, she looked happy. She wasn't the frail, thin girl I last saw when I signed for the movie. That was years ago, and I'd been worried about her. I didn't know what was going on with her then. I was glad it had worked out, whatever it was. Tiptoeing out, I checked on Finn next. I didn't go all the way in. His covers were pulled down so I could see the bare skin of his thigh. He was sleeping naked. Same Finn. He groaned about wearing boxers around the house when we were kids. He hadn't changed. That made me smile. Matthew would have been using the main room, and I was coming down the hallway when I heard the neigh in the distance. That was Shiloh calling for me, so I bypassed the stairs. I was going past the kitchen table when I looked down and stopped. The script was there. Unbroke. That was the name of the movie, a term used about a horse that wasn't trained. I frowned slightly, feeling a tug in my stomach, and reached for the script. The movie was about my mother. But why would they use that term? She'd been broken.
So you do come to the house every now and then?
I whipped around, seeing Matthew in the threshold of the open patio door. He wore the suit he had worn for the party, but his shirt collar was open. The top few buttons were undone. He pulled the shirt out from his pants, too, and unlike Abby, the bags under his eyes fell halfway down toward his mouth. My hand snapped back to my side. Ducking my head a little, I went toward him. If he woke the others, there'd be conversations I didn't want to have. And I heard Shiloh's neigh again. She was worried about me. Matthew heard her too, looking back over the fields.
That Shoal?
He stepped back and I moved past him, shutting the patio doors behind me. Shiloh.
Shiloh?
Shoal's daughter. She's a little darker gray than Shoal.
Ah.
His nostrils flared. I felt a wave of anger from him.
That makes sense. It's like you have a new sister.
I watched him warily, moving to the edge of the patio. I murmured. You look well. His nostrils flared again. Heat pooled in his eyes.
You don't.
I flinched, looking away. He cursed under his breath.
Sorry. I'm sorry. Your hair is more blonde than I remembered. You're still so thin. And I want to hug you, but I'm scared if I try, you'll take off like a damned deer.
I looked back up, and there was a yearning in his eyes that had me swallowing over a knot. He moved to take a step forward, but stopped, and in a low voice, he asked,
Can I hug you, Morgan? Can I hug my sister?
I'm not your sister. I paused a beat. Or your stepsister. Not anymore. But once we had been. We'd been a family. That was a long time ago and years passed. He took them from me when I remained at the house. Peter Kellerman used my inheritance to pay for my homeschooling, but that was it. And a part of me always wondered if that'd been at Matthew's insistence. When my mom was murdered, my stepfather wanted nothing to do with me. Staff moved into the house acting like my keepers. Not that I was bitter. I wasn't. Peter Kellerman always scared me. But he took my siblings away. That'd been the one thing I was angry with him about. I recognized the look in Matthew's gaze. Ownership. It reminded me of how my stepfather looked at my mother. He took another step toward me and I jumped back, hitting the railing. Don't! I spoke quickly because he was right. If he pushed, I would run. It was how I was. His head fell back and he cursed again under his breath.
You're still like a wild animal.
He looked out over the fields, over where I could hear the river trickling, and where I could already smell the dew forming on the grass. I could hear the horses on the field across from us, on the other side of the river. But I also knew he couldn't see or feel or hear any of those things. He just saw darkness, because the sun had yet to crest the horizon. I almost felt sorry for him. I was a wild animal, yes. I could live out there with them, but I was also human. I would always come back. This was my mother's home. Normally, I felt her when I came back. But I couldn't feel her right then, and I didn't like it. I looked back inside the house. There are so many people here. He nodded, his hand going into his pocket.
We changed the ending.
It was an abrupt change of topic, but I went with it. I frowned. You did?
Yeah.
There was a glass of champagne on the table. He picked it up, tipping his head back to take a swallow.
The studio that invested with us thought a happily ever after ending would do better in theaters. Also, his eyes narrowed, lingering on me. You aren't in the movie. I fell silent. Dad went to great lengths to hide you so no one knows about you. We thought about writing you in, but there would have been questions. A mysterious Kellerman daughter, even through marriage, who lives alone, and that's if she's even in the house? He laughed to himself. There'd be a media storm around you.
He waved a hand around the place.
No one knows about you. Well, except maybe one.
Finn's fiance? He did a double take.
How do you know about her?
Voices travel. I touched my ear. I have good hearing. He grunted.
I suppose so. She's coming later if you want to meet her.
His mouth flattened again.
Are you going to see Finn and Abby too? And not where?
He gestured back inside the house.
You see them, but they don't see you. I know Abby would love to hug you.
I heard the sadness again from him. I knew it was from him, that he wanted to hug me and couldn't. Maybe I should. But the thought of feeling his arms circle me, of being crushed to him, made me want to recoil. No, I couldn't. He wanted more than a hug. I could feel it from him. I chose my words carefully, deciding on. It'd be nice to talk to her, too. He laughed again.
Could you do me a favor? If you have any pull with that stallion, can you keep the herd from the humans?
Another drip of bitterness.
Your herd? Almost took out the star of the movie.
They weren't my herd. It wasn't like that. Star? That was who that guy was?
Yep. A goddamn A-list star. We got him because he needs a good movie for his public image. Couldn't afford him otherwise.
He glanced over again.
He's playing Peter. The script is mostly the love story that Peter and Karen had. The good parts, anyway. He's playing the side of Peter we all wanted to have growing up.
The fairy tale. Matthew downed the rest of his champagne and picked up the bottle to pour himself some more. I finally felt a small ease in the air from him.
The script is getting award buzz already.
He was using words I didn't understand, so I only nodded. I didn't want to tell him that. I didn't need to remind him how different I was from the rest of them. From him. Shiloh neighed again. This time the sound was closer. She was coming to look for me.
Shit.
Matthew glared in the direction the sound came from.
You gotta go to her. I can't have a feral horse walking around on our property. We could get sued if she hurt anyone.
I threw him a look, but started from the patio. She wouldn't hurt anyone.
She wouldn't hurt you. But she'd run someone over if she felt threatened, so yeah, she would.
Another whinny. She was growing more anxious. I avoided the last few steps and jumped over the barrier. I glanced back. Matthew was watching me from above, and I ignored the anger he didn't know he was broadcasting. I'll come back. Immediately, the anger waned, but only a bit. He held up his glass.
Be safe, Morgan.
I began running, moving soundlessly over the rocks. I was to the barn when I heard him add under his breath,
I love you.
I paused for just a second before I grabbed the post and launched myself over the fence. He never knew how much I could hear. Shiloh was waiting for me. There were two fence lines. She'd come all the way up to the end of the first field. It was the closest she'd ever been to the main house, and at the sight of me, she began moving around, restless. I was halfway to her, far beyond what Matthew could have seen, but I felt eyes on me. Someone was watching me. And like a deer, I froze. My head cocked to the side as I tried to feel where the eyes were coming from. I turned, feeling my attention pulled toward one of the private cabins. And there he was. The star Matthew talked about. He was standing on his bedroom porch, a bottle in his hand. I could smell the booze despite the distance between us. He shouldn't have been able to see me. It was dark. A black canvas to a normal human. But I knew he could. I felt it low in my belly. A different wave of awareness swept over me. It felt strange. alien. I picked up my pace and sprinted for Shiloh. She waited on the other